Final hour of the 9 till noon show on this Monday morning, and we've been speaking to Raymond about the US presidential election and the withdrawal of President Joe Biden from the race last night, the expectation that incumbent Vice President Kamala Harris will take the spot, assuming all the various legal issues with primaries previously held can be ironed out and that candidacy can be confirmed. Raymond, we were speaking before the break about the swing states, and you believe that there's maybe half a dozen crucial states for Kamala Harris, and she has an uphill battle to win them.
Donald, I think she has a serious uphill battle. The situation in Gaza is, you know, beyond, I don't know what diplomatic term you can use in here. There is an awful lot of Muslims in, like, Michigan. Michigan is a must-win state. Like, they're extremely, and for very, very good reason, upset at you know, what Biden has done in here. And it's like, I don't know, Biden has, there's something like 14,000 one-ton and quarter-ton bombs have been shipped to Israel, and a huge amount of military support, intelligence support, and it's all been targeted at civilians in here. She's got a serious uphill battle in here, you know, in a number of these swing states, because it's, you know, there's an issue with Kamala Harris in here, and I don't know, the American term, I think it's called a word salad. Like, she is unable to express herself on occasion. She's like, gets in a pretzel. She's saying the same thing over in different ways, and like, she starts at something, and it's supposed to be the ending, and then she's back at the start, and it's, people are scratching their heads, like, you know, what did you say there? You know, so I don't know. I mean, Kamala, she's out there, and then, you know, this Robert Kennedy Jr., he's polling at 10%. You know, he was a Democrat. Now he's trying to run as an independent. 10% is, it's a big number over there. And, you know, the Democratic Party at the top, you know, effectively demonized him. He was the worst thing since Satan came along. And you know, and then there was a CNN debate there, I guess, a month ago that started all this with, you know, Joe Biden in here, and they kept him off the CNN debate. Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, you're talking to democracy, and you only have two people that can debate, and somebody's getting 10%, but, you know, he doesn't qualify. He's a nobody in here. And so, you know, it's an unfortunate situation overall in here. It's not, you know, enlightening. And, you know, it sets a sort of a poor example for the rest of the world when they're all talking about, you know, democracies and everything that's associated with it. And, I mean, Pete, there's another issue coming up here. Suppose Donald Trump wins the election. Donald Trump is death on taxes, on corporate taxes especially. He lowered the corporate tax rates from, I don't know, it was 36 or 37.5%, somewhere around there, down to 21%, you know, which is a massive drop. He has told all the big corporations he's going to drop it further to 15%. Now, the current taxes expire at the end of 2025. He drops it to 15%. You know, the people in Dublin better start paying attention, because foreign direct investment is going to be, you know, changed substantially. Because, you know, there won't be any advantages to setting up in Ireland here. And, all the Googles and the Microsofts, yeah, that run everything through with these Dutch sandwiches or wherever they used to be called in here, they won't have any reason to do that anymore. You know, so, like, there's possibly, you know, serious changes, you know, yeah, a year and a half, you know, but... You know, I can't predict the future, obviously.
Well, the next number of months are going to be very interesting indeed, to say the least. Raymond, listen, thank you very much indeed for holding on and for sharing your perspective with us. We'll be speaking to you again, I'm sure, no doubt, in the coming weeks and months. But a lot of talking to be done over the next while, and it's great to have your perspective on it. Raymond, for the moment, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donald. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Raymond. Bye-bye. It's been a pleasure. That's Raymond there. He's a dual Irish-American citizenship. He's living here. He's an independent voter. And that's his take on the current situation. Now, earlier on, we were talking about GP appointments. And one of the things people can do sometimes is leave us WhatsApp voice messages. And this is one of our callers. And this is their perspective on the issue of GP appointments.
Hi, Greg. I phoned the surgery on Thursday to get an appointment with the doctor on Monday, and I was told she was full up. She was off Tuesday, and I was told to ring in the following next Wednesday. So on Friday morning, I decided to ring again. I got a different secondary, and she told me I could have an appointment for Monday morning, 10 to 10. And I've been in this morning and seen the doctor. So I don't know what's going on with these doctors, these surgeries, or these secondaries, because one couldn't give me an appointment and the other one could. So I don't know. Thank you. Bye.
And that's a story from one of our listeners. And thanks to our listener for sharing that with us. That's just one story of many. It's the Linfield Noon Show on Highland Radio. It's 30 minutes past 11. We're going to take a short break. In a moment, we'll be speaking about pharmacies in Ireland and their funding. And you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Donald Kavanagh with you until, as the name suggests, 12 noon. Now, joined on the line by Cathy Marr, who's a pharmacist and the chair of the Pharmacy Contracts Committee of the IPU, the Irish Pharmacy Union. Cathy, good morning and thank you for joining us. Cathy, funding in pharmacies, 1 in 10 operating at a loss and struggling to survive. And a part of that problem is the fact that HSE funding hasn't changed with the times.
Absolutely not. And you're very, very right there, Donald. 10% of pharmacies are operating at a loss. And that means that they're not viable. They're really just hanging on by the fingertips. Most people and most of your listeners will know pharmacy as the hub of all of their communities. We are dedicated to patient care. But we're at a position now where 10% are unviable and another 30% are very, very close to becoming unviable. Our funding model hasn't changed since 2009. We have been on a 16-year pay freeze since 2009. When the country was in a financial crisis, we had FEMPI, which was the Financial Emergency Measures in the Public Interest Act, and pharmacies, like many other sectors around the country, were cut in terms of their payments and their fees, but ours has not changed in 2009. To be honest, I don't know any other sector that is on the same pay scale 16 years later. We're calling on the government with our pre-budget submission to end the 16-year pay freeze, to treat us fairly and to invest in pharmacy as we go forward. And it's interesting to hear the comments around GP care and GP appointments. We know that pharmacists play such an important role in the delivery of healthcare to patients, and as professionals, we have the highest trust rating in the country for any professional at 97% trust rating by the public, and that is above any other profession, GP, nurse, teacher, politician. And that's because people do want to get the service from us, but we can't do it at a loss anymore.
And there's a follow-on question from that, because it's interesting to note, particularly over the course of the past year, that when we, as we often do with the case of Letterkenny University Hospital, and there's pressure on the emergency department, you get the standard now. I know it's going to be the same in every part of the country. Every university hospital and acute hospital in the country will have similar messages, I'm sure, where we're saying to people, please only go to the accident and emergency unit or the emergency department in case of an urgent emergency. Please consider other options, including the out-of-hours GP service, and what's coming more and more to these messages from the HSE and your local pharmacy, which can very often be the first stop for help and advice. And the HSE is pushing the pharmacies for help and advice, and is doing so, it seems to me, more and more over the course of the past year or so. And that presumably is going to give you more work. It's going to put you under more pressure, as it were. And that's effectively going to add further to the pressure you're under already.
Absolutely. I'm an independent pharmacist. I bought my pharmacy 19 years ago, and I just know the pressure that we're all under constantly. I've just returned from a week off, and my last week off was this time last year, and I've had no time off in between because we're trying to do as much as we can for the public. 82% of dispensing income for pharmacies across the country is reliant on state funding, 82%. So which really means about 60% of my overall income relies on the government at a rate that isn't still paid from 2009. When I look at comparators such as public you know, other public service workers, professionals, other service providers, most people have had their increase. FEMPI has been unwound, and most people have had their salaries, fees or allowances increased by about 27% in those 16 years. And that's at a time when the average fee per pharmacy per prescription item dispensed has dropped by 24%. When we add in, as a business owner, when I add in cost of living for my staff, I need to make sure that my staff still have a decent cost of living, the cost of doing business. So we've seen statutory sick pay come in and will continue to increase up until 2026. The minimum wage has significantly increased over the past number of years. And then the just cost of doing business, trying to keep my doors open, it means that it is year on year becoming very, very difficult to keep my doors open and provide the level of service that I want to provide. Our dispensing fee is also very punitive in that it reduces as the month goes on. So it is €5 for the first 1,600 items in a month. And for most average pharmacies, that means by about day six of the month, my fee drops, and it drops for the next 800 items. So by day 10 of the month, I am then on 350. And to me, as a business owner and a healthcare provider, that tells me that the government thinks that the patient that comes into me on the last day of the month is worth less than the patient that comes into me at the first day of the month. And I know as a healthcare professional, I'm giving them the same level of service and care that I do regardless. But in all of that, in that 350, I have to cover all of my overheads, the supervision, the height, the heat, the light, the rent, everything that I have to do to keep my business open. And at a time when we know that, you know, that WhatsApp message you've just played, talking around appointment times, my level of care is unscheduled. And I do not know what's walking in to the pharmacy at any given time. I need to make sure all prescriptions are dispensed in a safe and effective manner. The patients are given care and healthcare advice. And very often pharmacists have emergency medicines, we have emergency situations that arise. And we're also delivering, I'm now looking ahead to winter season of vaccinations again. It's exceptionally busy and we need the government to pay us appropriately for what we currently do and look forward and invest in a sector that can really, really make a difference to the public.
And I'm sure you do have issues too when people will come in with, I had a situation, I was visiting home once in Waterford, and I forgot my prescription, and I went into the local pharmacy in Tremor in Waterford and managed to get the pharmacy in Tremor, rang the pharmacy I normally use in Letterkenny, and they had a conversation and they gave me an emergency supply, and that came off my next prescription, and it was, you know, and that was facilitated, but that took two pharmacists on a phone probably 5, 6, 7 minutes just to sort out that, because obviously they didn't want to give me the prescription without proof that I needed it. So, you know, and I'm sure you find yourself doing things like that all the time, where it's not always just, here's a prescription, please fill it, there you go, thank you very much. I'm sure you find yourself on a regular basis involved in situations.
Absolutely
like
not.
That.
Exactly. I could be on the phone 30, 40 times a day between conversations like you've just described, onto hospitals, onto GPs, onto consultants, onto nurses, onto dentists. Sometimes correcting prescriptions because there's been errors, sometimes trying to assess if the medicine has been prescribed in the right therapeutic appropriateness, whether the dose is right, the duration is right, maybe there's an allergy, maybe there's a shortage. But just to show, on the 1st of September, that's about to arrive, there's facility in place. The legislation means that we will be able to extend prescriptions for some patients, but we still don't know as a sector what the framework around that is to be. We don't know what will be paid for it. We don't know how it's going to work. And I know it's August in, 10 days. So we just need the government to look at us as a sector, to treat us fairly, to treat us as they treat other sectors. Let's look forward at what we can deliver for patients, to make sure the patient care is the first and foremost priority, but that we have to be funded for our core role and what we do day to day, and then look forward what extended services we can do. The time that you described of two pharmacists having that 6-7 minute phone call, an exchange in the legal framework by which they need to, so forward, and you're probably having to forward on an email prescription from one pharmacy to the other. There will be no funding for that. There's no cost covered there. Many of your listeners will know, previous to the pandemic, you would have gone to the GP, you would have had a piece of paper, and you would have come back into the pharmacy, and we would have used that piece of paper as your prescription. Because of the pandemic, things changed, had to change in a very emergent, you know, very rapid fashion, and most prescriptions now come into us via health mail, an encrypted email service. What most patients and what most public don't realise is that now front loads all of the cost to pharmacy, because the legislation didn't change, and the legislation still requires me as a pharmacist to print every single prescription. So it's estimated the pharmacists are printing 78 million A4 sheets a year in Ireland.
Ooh.
Now, the cost of the paper, the cost of the ink, on average is costing maybe 3 or 4,000 per year per pharmacy. And none of that has been funded by the HSE, the Department of Health. That's just one small example of costs that are continuously being levelled on us to try and deliver the same level of service on the fee that we're still receiving from 2009.
And to be honest, as a patient, I'm one of those people, and I had no idea that that was the case. Guilty as charged. I'm one of those people who think that this is one of the better things that came out of the pandemic, because mm-hmm. now everything is online. I can ring the GP when I need it to be extended. I ring the pharmacy and I say, I'm going to drop up and pick up my prescription mm-hmm. in 10 minutes. Lovely, done. We'll see you then. It's grand. I mean, you know, and you know, to me, it's really, really handy. That everything now can be done either on, I can ring them, give them advance, I'm coming, they'll have it ready, I'll walk in, how's it going, there you go, thanks very much indeed. And I walk out and all is sorted. And I suppose we don't think about what goes on in the background to actually facilitate that, that and make it happen.
I still have to print it. I have to print two copies if it's a patient with a medical card, or I have to claim from the state schemes. So 82% of my prescriptions are from the state scheme. So medical card, long-term illness, drug payment scheme. I have to print them twice because I'll have to submit for payment. And then the original copy that I've printed has to be stored on my, I have to stamp it and endorse it as I would have done pre-pandemic with an old-fashioned piece of paper. And then I have to store it on my premises for 2 years. In my role within the Irish Pharmacy Union, I'm part of the negotiation process that we're in with the government, trying to in the Department of Health, asking for to be treated fairly and to be treated in a non-discriminatory fashion as other healthcare workers have been. I did invite department officials to come to my pharmacy, and they did actually see a room. We call it the yellow bag room because we must store our prescriptions per month in a yellow bag. So I have at any one point at least 24 months of paperwork that has to be stored. And then when it comes to destroying it, I have to pay for all of my destruction, for my, obviously, the confidential shredding and all of that.
Yep, and that can't be just tossed into a bin.
That, absolutely not. So to think that the 350 dispensing fee has to cover the paper, as I've described, the ink, as I've described, but also, first and foremost, I'm a healthcare professional. I want to deliver the best care for my patient. So I have to review your prescription, make sure that it's complete, authentic and legal. I need to make sure that it's the right medicine for the right condition at the right dose for the right durations. I check for interactions. We have to check for allergic reactions, clinical abuse or misuse. We have to go through all of that before I even dispense it. And then once I dispense it, I go out to the patient and I chat about the name of the medicine, the dosage, the route of administration, what to expect from a medicine, what to expect as side effects, what to do if there's a problem, what to do if there's a dose missed. All of that has to come in, and that's for 350. And to be quite frank, it's not enough. As I said, I bought my pharmacy in 2005, so it's 19 years next month, and I haven't finished paying it off, like most pharmacists around the country.
Do you believe that those negotiations may become more, shall we say, confrontational, and that it may end up with pharmacists actually taking action to force the government's hand?
I think what we have to see is pharmacists have to look at an awful lot of what we do for free, such as the situation that you just described, or what often happens, and I'm sure you've done it yourself, or if you have young children, you've perhaps popped into a pharmacist to say, look, will you have a look at my child's rash, or they've had a fall, or something has happened, could you pop into the consultation room, we'll have a chat. And I could be in there for 15 or 20 minutes, and I might end up referring you into a GP, into A&E, and you off you go, being very well looked after by a very clinically skilled healthcare professional. No money will have exchanged hands. So I won't have been paid for that consultation. So at some point, pharmacists do have to look at what do we do for free, and we can't afford to subsidise the government. Another thing that we talk about is disposal of unused medicines. So many people will bring back unused medicines to the pharmacy to be destroyed, but obviously there's a safety issue. Accidental overdose and accidental poisoning, or deliberate poisoning, deliberate overdose, which is a safe public health concern. And we have an environmental concern should unused medicines go into the environment, either through burning, through flushing down the toilet, and all sorts of other ways that we hear. But actually, nothing, no destruction of medicine scheme is funded by the Department of Health.
Yeah.
So all of that has to be funded by the pharmacist, and it costs 300 or 400 every 6 weeks to have these yellow bins taken to Belgium and have them incinerated correctly and efficiently. So many pharmacists have now had to start saying to patients, we can't take that back anymore. There's a health and safety risk to my own staff, because, to be quite frank, sometimes we find things in bin bags that we really wouldn't want to have to put our hands on.
Yeah.
But also, it's too costly. I can't have the labour cost of someone de-blistering things for hours, but I can't actually afford to have the private fee to have to go and get that collected. That's another thing.
Could we potentially face a situation down the line where pharmacists actually start taking direct action?
I think pharmacists will start to close. It's anticipated that the same report, the Fitzgerald Power Annual Sector Review Report, anticipated that 500 pharmacists will close over the next 5 years. And that's fairly stark. And when we look at our nearest neighbours, both in the UK and Northern Ireland, and I'm from Northern Ireland originally, and I've seen very many of my colleagues either working fewer hours or not finding jobs. In England alone, more than 1,000 pharmacies have closed in the past 3 years, and 400 of those were in 2023 alone. I think up until this point, in 2024, we've another 300 closures in England. And many of those are in areas of social deprivation, where pharmacy need is really, really essential. But pharmacies can't continue to operate at a loss because the government there haven't acknowledged that not only do fees need to increase, but they also need to link in. There needs to be linkage. They need to link in with either the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, or with the public pay index as well. You know, every public sector worker, their pay goes up by a certain increment per year to match in with the inflation. We know the public sector workers are going to have pay increases of between 10 and 17% over the next 2 years. And as a private sector, who's reliant on state funding for 82% of my business, it's very hard to stomach that. So are we going to take action? I certainly see that a lot of the things that I do unfunded, I won't be in a position to do in the months coming forward.
Cathy Maher, Chair of the Pharmacy Contracts Committee of the IPU, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Donna.
This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio, and we are joined in studio by Paul Harkin, and Paul is the chair of the Ballybuffet and Stranorlar Chamber of Commerce. Paul, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Paul, great to have you here. There has been a major rebranding of the chamber in the Twin Towns, and you're looking ahead to really getting more active in the business life of the area.
Yeah, in addition to what the chamber has traditionally done for the business of Ballybuffet, we intend to become more business orientated. I suppose there's a sense maybe of less of what the business can do for the chamber and more about what the chamber can do for the business. So with that in mind, Donald, we have an exciting year plan ahead. You know, breakfast briefings is something we see becoming the norm, where we talk about things that are really you know, relevant to business in terms of health and safety, IR, HR, energy costs, you know, retaining staff. You know, there's a huge array of things out there at the minute, you know, that are challenging for business. So, and then I suppose our main event this year is our awards night, business awards, which is the first to be done in the Twin Towns. Looking forward to that. You know, loads of awards on the night, both business and community. You know, things like customer service award, large business, small business award, community award, sports facility, and I suppose one that we're definitely looking forward to is the lifetime achievement award.
And this is going to involve obviously interaction with the community and getting people involved, and I'm sure you'll be announcing over the course of the coming weeks how you want people to make their votes and get involved in all that.
Yeah, all that'll unfold, Donal, as this develops. But look, it's just about, you know, as you say, getting more interaction both with the community and the business sector. Certainly we see the chamber going forward too as being, you know, more in terms of for community-based you know, sports facilities, different things, organisations, you know, to get them involved as well.
And there will still, of course, be involvement in things like Christmas lights and Patrick's Day, things like that. Chamber will still be playing an active role in the community in terms of those particular events.
Well, look, the Chamber has always done these things in the past and we'll continue to do that in the future. I suppose people, you know, when they talk about these events, you know, they talk about the monetary cost of putting these on. But in addition to that, Donald, there's huge manpower. issue there. So, you know, certainly we would like to see more people get involved to support such events in the town. You know, you stand on a Christmas week or 2 weeks before Christmas and you're switching on the Christmas lights and it can be cold and wet, but there's a good feel factor there. Yeah. You know, people are in good spirits and all. You know, last year, just so people are aware, the Chamber actually allocated an additional 10,000 to putting up new lights in the town. I'm sure anybody that visited the town or drove through the towns would have particularly seen the enhanced area around the bridge with lights. So
absolutely,
that's the kind of things the Chamber is involved in.
The rebranding is something that was planned for a while. It's an important one because I suppose it refocuses you in terms of your view of what Chamber is doing, but also it's going to refocus the view of the community and the community's maybe appreciation of Chamber, and maybe something like Chamber of Commerce is something the community can take for granted. And maybe part of this is you saying to the community, look, we're playing a really important role here. Please recognise that.
Well, look, as I say, that's what it's about. It's getting more involvement. We would certainly like to see more and more businesses come on board, because at the end of the day, it's like we say, we're stronger together. You know, strength is in numbers. But look, it doesn't matter what you try to do, Donald. It takes a huge effort on behalf of people to put it together. You know, certainly in the past, we've struggled in terms of, you know, getting bodies. Like, as I say, even the Christmas lights, you know, you need a certain amount of people to be there to steward the night. You need people to clean up after. There's so much involved in putting on these things. But look, you know, from our perspective as a new Chamber, you know, we would like to, you know, see these things being enhanced going forward and certainly try and bring more people on board. You know, we've had a few workshops already that were quite successful. We recently had DLDC in talking to us about contracts of employment and grievance procedures. You know, things that are very important to businesses, but unfortunately, not all businesses might just be aware of their obligations in relation to these things. So we'd certainly see, you know, like, you know, breakfast briefings and stuff like that becoming the norm going forward. And just, you know, a sense of trying to make it more relevant to business, you know, make it more appealing to business in terms of, you know, what they would like to see from their chamber.
There was a discussion on the programme earlier on this morning, I don't know if you've heard it, with regards to the state of the road going through the Twin Towns and the need for a resurfacing project to take place on the road there. I mean, as the owner of Harkin Scala, you, Paul, will be more aware than most about the road issues in the Twin Towns, and I'm sure you'd love to see both short-term and long-term action to ease the situation. And I suppose really when it comes to it, the long-awaited Twin Towns bypass can't come quickly enough, I presume.
Well, look, you're right about that, Donald. I mean, the town does be congested a lot of times. Just in relation to the roads, you know, and the upkeep of the roads, like, it's very important to have a very strong chamber when roadworks and things like that take place. Like, I'm no stranger to that myself. I know in the past, and the Donegal Road, it's all been resurfaced at one stage. You know, it took 9 months. And I know, like, from my perspective, you know, the Chamber certainly helped me in terms of, you know, opening up doors to people that, you know, I needed to talk to in terms of, you know, how we were going to make that as painless as possible for me during that period. So, look, you're right, certainly, you know, it would be welcome to see improvements in the town in terms of the road service. But it's also important for the Chamber to be there and a good voice in terms of, you know, making sure that happens, you know, with as minimum disruption to business as possible.
I know Chamber has traditionally had a good relationship with Donegal County Council, both in terms of the executive and in terms of the members of the Lifford Stranoller MD, and I'm sure that is going to continue into the future. And those discussions with Donegal County Council about things like the roads and other things as well are going to be a really important part of what the Chamber does and what you will be doing as Chair.
Well, without a doubt, Donald, you know, in the past we've often had to you know, meet with the council in terms of different things that were happening in the town. And look, as I say, they have a job to do too, and sometimes it's quite difficult for them. But look, in fairness to them, they've always been very cooperative and very supportive in terms of the businesses in the town and the impact that such things can have on the business.
Just remind us again, Paul, before we finish, with regards to the awards ceremony, the first ever business awards in the Twin Towns to take place in the Villa Rose on Saturday, October 5th.
Yeah, so it takes place in the Villa Rose on Saturday, October the 5th. Look, first time to do it, so there's huge interest on it. Tickets for the event are €50 each, or you can book a table of 10 for €400. There's still some sponsorship opportunities available for the night, so we'd look forward to somebody if they're willing to put their name forward for that. Mm-hmm. So look, it's an exciting night, you know, not just in recognising the businesses in the town, but also recognising the community at large, you know, some of the organisations in the town that play a huge part in, you know, the things that happen around the Twin Towns. Just don't know if I could too mm-hmm. mention the Base Centre and Boba Fee and Dean Gillespie and his team in Basic. You know, they provide invaluable support to the Chamber. Without that support, it would be extremely difficult for us to do what we do. But not just the Chamber, in terms of what happens in the wider community in the Twin Towns and surrounding areas, you know, be it fun for the town, be it the public realm, be it the upkeep of the towns, you know, Basic is certainly at the heart of everything that happens in the Twin Towns, and they do phenomenal work on behalf of the town. So just, I would just like to thank them for that today.
And that ongoing community engagement between people like that, between yourselves, between the council and between the wider community is going to continue to be a very important part of life in the Twin Towns and the environs. In terms of if anyone wants to get in contact, either with regards to getting a ticket for the awards or a sponsorship or indeed joining the Chamber, because I'm sure you're always on the lookout for new members, how can they make contact?
Look, you're right, Donald. We would love to, obviously love to grow the membership, because our plan too going forward is that, you know, at some stage we would like to employ a chamber manager, who would look after the daily running of the chamber. But look, for anybody looking to get in touch with us, you can email info@banschamber.com. So that's info@banschamber.com. And you can telephone 919-0909. And look, as I say, anybody looking for tickets, especially for the awards night, you know, get in quick, because it has proven to be very popular and tickets are going pretty quick.
Paul Harkin, owner of Harkin's Gala and chair of the Ballybuffet and Stranorer Chamber of Commerce. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us today, and all the best with it, Paul.
Thank you, Donald.
Now, comment in a quarter says, thank God for pharmacists, because they often know more than the doctor, especially when you're a regular, and they're very knowledgeable to deal with. And that indeed is one of the points that Cathy made when we spoke to her, that a pharmacist will know his or her patient. And the pharmacists often find themselves contacting the GP to say, look, are you sure about this prescription? Because there may be an allergy, or the patient may be on another drug that's counterindicated or whatever. And very often pharmacists are fighting rearguard actions like that. Now, there was a report last week that an investigation was launched in Convoy following a fire at a premises which was understood to be attached to rumours in relation to the housing of refugees. Now, we're joined on the line by John. John, good morning.
Morning, Donald.
John, you want to just give some clarification as to what the nature of that fire was, because there may have been some misunderstanding as to what actually happened.
Well, there was a fire, yes, there's no question about it, but it was a dumper truck that was set on fire. There was no buildings whatsoever. And we got a couple of phone calls from relatives in England and even in the States wondering was what building was burned, or was an old burn. There's nothing to that. It was just a dumper truck on the building site sitting in a corner. Now, whether it went on fire or it was set on fire deliberately, the guards are investigating that. But there was a piece put up on Facebook or on social media saying that it was a building that was burned and was under 6 o'clock news, and it was linked down to Kula, which has caused a lot of anxiety around the area. And I'm just right on it, looking over at it. And then we heard a bit on social media, somebody coming and doing a video and saying that the houses that have been built on that site are for more planters. Now, planters coming into our town, that was a very provocative word to be using. Conway is a very tight-knit and a very friendly community. We all work together and we have gone through the years, even through the troubles. We all back each other's back. And, you know, the community spirit of and an outsider comes in and starts spreading stuff like that. There was no fire at all, Donald. Absolutely no fire, except a dumper truck. And that has caused a lot of unease in our area. The people saying they're about to be burnt and then linked to Cooler. Yeah. That's bullshit. Sorry for the language.
Yeah. Okay, well, John, thanks for clarifying that. So it was a dumper truck, and we may well hear more about this. Gardaí will be with us tomorrow, of course, for our
information
slot.
Right.
And it may well be that this will be one of the issues that they raise on the information slot tomorrow with us. But, John, listen, thanks very much indeed. So we can clarify, no building was burnt. It was a dumper truck on a building site. And a video that claims a building was set alight to stop refugees coming to the area, that video is incorrect.
Okay, thank you.
Well, John, thank you very much indeed for that. That's we're happy to clarify that. That's John there calling us from Convoy. A few of your comments. A caller says, in relation to looking at the council to provide houses instead of the banks should be helping people to get mortgages, giving 100% where necessary. If you can afford rent, you can afford a mortgage, but the deposit is the main issue. Now, another caller says there are three factors that need to be acknowledged. Over 10,000 people resettled into Donegal from outside the country, so how can there not be an issue? €800 tax-free payments to landlords accommodating Ukrainians mean other landlords have had to increase their rents just to get a similar rate of return. And the council has been selling its housing stock under the tenant purchase scheme, and that's taking more social housing stock out of the system. And there are points that have been made by callers. Now, my daughter and her two friends were meant to travel back to Belfast from Greece on Friday. They booked the holiday with TUI. They got no accommodation on Friday as the TUI reps just wanted to deal with the mature people, left the young 18 to 21-year-olds in the airport. We managed to get them accommodation for Saturday as we couldn't get them in anywhere on Friday night. Everywhere was booked. They'd been at the airport since 11 o'clock. I better go back and just... This is, you'll recall, on Friday last, there was a global outage as a result of a problem between Microsoft and CrowdStrike, and the problem was linked to a software update, and that took a lot of airline, travel, health and other systems offline, and it meant people couldn't get flights, people couldn't get we heard of one case where people got stuck on a cruise ship and weren't allowed to disembark because all their systems were down, and people missed flights as a result, and people saying TUI, and I understand TUI, the company, had people there and they were unable to look after some of their passengers, and people spend quite a lot of time at airports. And the caller is saying, look, one of the biggest problems is they weren't given any information. They were left sitting all day in an airport for hours. They've also been told they're not entitled to accommodation, to compensation, as it is not the fault of the tour operator. One of them was a type 1 diabetic, and there was nothing done to help. And I fear there are many, many stories like that since last Friday, and hopefully at this point all these people that were affected have been sorted. But as I say, a lot of people discommoded by that outage that took place on Friday. Caller says, I've honeybees in my porch. They're very far in. I'm afraid of what may happen. Some days they're quiet, other days they're very noisy. We can see the honey dripping down. We've called a few people, but no joy. Our one environmental person is in Kilkenny, and that just seems very far away. It could work out very expensive. Could anyone offer us a solution? We'll certainly put that out there. Callers with a problem with honeybees, and they are very concerned. So if you can offer any advice or help on that, please let us know. A message from someone that says, no wonder so many Irish people now have their own personal Jesus. For decades, the Catholic Church deployed squadrons of lawyers to oppress victims, cover crimes, stigmatise whistleblowers and move objectionable priests from place to place. If that wasn't bad enough, now it appears politicians can be gratuitously subjected to personal embarrassment when going to receive Holy Communion. From Bishop Casey to Minister Colin Burke, fishers of men, Depeche Mode, more like. And that comment comes from Michael, and I do appreciate the song pun, Michael. Thank you very much indeed. Caller says, my Facebook account got hacked a few weeks ago. My passwords have all been changed. I tried unsuccessfully to contact Facebook Ireland. There is an email and phone number for Facebook Ireland, but the phone rings once and gets rejected. The email keeps bouncing back undelivered. Any suggestions as to how to resolve it? I've years of photos lost, and that's what I really want. I can't offer it now. Very often people say they've been hacked on Facebook. When they haven't been hacked, they've been cloned. And what will happen is somebody will put up a a page purporting to be Donald Kavanagh, and they'll start asking for something or trying to sell something. And that happened to me recently, actually, where a clone, and they start sending out friend requests. So I would certainly have a personal policy. If ever I get a friend request from someone with whom I'm already friends, ignore it. And I always say to my friends, if you ever get what appears to be a friend request from me, ignore it. And you see this happening more and more. People get friend requests from someone with whom they're already friends. That can very often be effectively cloners that are trying to sell stuff. So they establish this new account with somebody's real name. They send out requests to their friends. A lot will respond back, and then they try to, or they'll try sending these, oh, I'm stuck and I need money, or things like that. So that can be an issue. That's cloning. That's not hacking. This seems different. I presume, caller, you've tried to go under the change your password facility, which is there. And if you have two point authentication, if you, I know on some accounts you can do a thing where you can ask to change your passwords. They'll send a code to your mobile and then you can change via that. I'm not sure if that helps here, but if anyone can give any advice to our caller, please do. Caller says, I was a contractor about 30 years ago. I had a job in Coolock. After a week on site, the wooden huts were burned down. We had to replace them with huts that couldn't be burnt down at very expensive costs. It's a social side of life and thuggery more than non-nationals. The non-nationals are being used as an excuse, so says a caller. And the caller says, his parents were quoted €800 for two nights with breakfast only in a Donegal hotel. When you factor in dinner and drinks, you need well over €1,000. That is a very, very high price indeed. ESB, remember there was a big push there recently for people to move on to smart meters. Well, a caller was saying, since I got my smart meter, my bill from the ESB has been colossal. And I know a lot of people were saying that that was what very likely would happen. And we'll put the question out there and maybe something for discussion on the programme tomorrow. Have you had this new smart meter and what's its effect on your bill been, whoever your provider happens to be? It's one to be interesting, actually, because we do know that people were being urged, you know, get this smart meter. It's the greatest thing. It's going to solve everything. Let's see what the impact of those smart meters were. Now, caller said, and this is a comment from last week on the Highland Radio Bulletin. It said there are now 42 fewer Gardaí in Donegal than in 2020, and there's not been a superintendent in Letterkenny for 6 months. The question is, what's going on? You simply cannot find an open Garda station in any town or village these days. This is the reality. Could the reason be to facilitate the drug trade from the north into Donegal? But that will be denied by everyone. There is no other logical conclusion unless you have one. I don't think anything is being done to facilitate a drug trade from the north into Donegal. I think what's happening is that Garda numbers were down on previous years and Gardaí have been trying to redeploy resources. And one of the ways they redeploy their resources is they centralise into various places. When I started work as a journalist in Donegal, there were 5 Garda districts. There was a district in Glenties. That Glenties district was then scrapped. And now what the Milford area at the moment now covers Milford, and it also covers right down toward Glenties as well. Now, and then Milford was covering into West Donegal as well. Now they're talking about scrapping the Milford Garda district, and there's discussion of basically having 3 Garda districts in Donegal. You'll have Inishowen, which runs out of Buncrana. You'll have sort of east-west Donegal, which runs out of Letterkenny, and you'll have south and south-west Donegal, which runs out of Ballyshannon. And, you know, that's what's happening is there is a trend toward centralisation, and that is happening in every sphere. Right, and that's it for the 9 till noon show. We have John Breslin coming up next, of course, around the northwest. Thank you to all of you for listening to the programme and for your comments and for your participation. Thanks to all those who contributed to the show today. Most importantly, thanks to you for listening. Caroline Orr produced. Thanks to Shannon as well. Until tomorrow, have a very good day.